Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod once again as we count down to the World Cup, only a few weeks away now. And to do that, we've got a couple of special guests on the show today. One, the two-time World Cup winner Jerome Kaino, coming up very, very soon. We'll get his thoughts on the Rugby World Cup, his life in France, maybe a look back at a few memories from his time in black, and also that balance between playing hard but fair. And that's particularly important at the moment because we've seen once again Billy Vunipola shoulder to the head, just like Owen Farrell's, and we're talking about dangerous tackling. So we'll get into plenty of that. We'll have a look ahead to the All Blacks against South Africa this weekend at Twickenham. Of course, last time Jerome played that, it was a 2015 World Cup semi-final, so we'll ask him a little bit about that. And also, in our series of All Blacks heading into the World Cup, Ofa Tuonga Fasi this week, next week, Rico Ioane. So stick around a little bit later on for Ofa Tuonga Fasi. Before we get into all of that, of course, a quick introduction. Bryn Hall isn't here, but my man James Parsons is. Welcome back, mate.
Oh, it's good to be here. I thought when you said two special guests, I was included in that, but, you know, not to be.
you're not a guest, mate. You're the star attraction.
Yeah.
Week on week on week. That's what it says in YouTube.
Just put a bit of burly out there, you know, something to pump myself up.
Really, yeah. We've got a guest. Might as well introduce him now before we get into all of that nonsense once again. 2011, 2015 World Cup winner, 83 tests for the All Blacks, 62 games for Toulouse before switching into the coaching. Jerome Kaino, welcome.
Hey, lads. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. What's going on? You're sitting in Toulouse now. You've just come off the training field.
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround over here. We're back into our season. Just had round one last Friday night. And so the boys are fully into the season now and looking forward to the World Cup to roll around so we can have a little break.
Man, the grind is real.
Oh, especially in France, isn't it? It's a little bit, I suppose, because you're with the one team, but it's definitely an extended period, that French competition.
If you make it all the way to the final, it's 11 months, and then depending on the club, you've got 4 weeks before your first pre-season game. So there's a bit of juggling to do, but no, it's good fun.
Is there much difference in the pre-season?
No, there's no pre-season at all. I think it's probably 2-3 days of fitness, Bronco, the return assessments, and then apart from that, we just get straight into rugby.
So what is your role exactly? Your skills coach?
So I'm contact skills coach, so I look after the breakdown and anything around the contact area, breakdown area, but that's with the pro team. But I also look after the academy here. I'm forwards and defence coach with the academy.
You're coaching them in French, are you? How's your language?
What? Frangli. Half French, half English. I had a bit of English in there, but I understand all French. I can understand when they're talking to me. It's just trying to structure my sentences to reply. I always structure it in the way we'd reply in English, but 95% of the time it doesn't work that way in French. It's usually backwards or muddled up.
Do your kids speak fluent French? I presume that they do.
They overtook me miles ago, ages ago. So, yeah, they're like sponges. They picked it up real quick. And my daughter, she goes to an international school where there are a lot of Spanish kids, and she's picked up Spanish as well. So You're getting a little bit jealous.
Future interpreter.
Jeff, you speak a couple of languages, English and code. You speak a lot of code.
Yeah, a lot of code. And getting back onto the code, Loms, the coachability of the French players, I know the young guys will probably be thirsty, but in terms of that pro level, I'm sure there's probably still some around that you played with, but having the stature you do in the game, they must sort of gravitate you around that contact area to better themselves.
Whenever you spoke about what we did in New Zealand or what the school system was like there, everyone just shut up and just listen. For example, we've got Owen Franks over here with us at the moment, and when he speaks about scrums or anything, everyone's just like dead silent, just listening, trying to take in.
Their production line and their dominance, I suppose, at that under 20 level must give them a lot of confidence that their systems, not only at clubland, but into that sort of international stuff, are thriving.
They're doing something right, but I think it's down to their domestic game here, like Pro D2, Federal 1. It's in a good place, French rugby, grassroots, and I think it's filtering through to the age grades. You're seeing the quality of players that are coming through, and even in top 14, you've got 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds playing top level. And then you filter those kids through to the under-20s, and that's where you get a World Cup. So, I think French rugby and the domestic game here is in a really good place, and it's seeing the benefits.
You've been, I suppose, privileged to watch a real golden era of players come through, whether it's DuPont and Intermark and Ramos and those young guys that come through in your time. Are they wired similarly to New Zealanders in the way the flair and the skills and all those things as they come in?
When we talk about Antoine DuPont and Roman Intermac, DC comes to mind, the way they operate, the way they think about the game, how professional they are off the field. I immediately think Dan Carter in terms of their mannerisms, what they do.
On DuPont, is he a big target in that sort of French clubland?
Yep. Whenever he plays for us, everyone always tries to target him because he's obviously the link forwards and backs, but he's probably the key to our game going forward. But the way he adjusts, the way he adapts, it's incredible. Like, I think when I watch him play, it's like he loves pressure. He loves people targeting him because he'll always find a way to adapt to whatever pressure comes his way. And he's an incredible player. Probably, if he keeps going the way he is, could go down as one of the best. For his size, he's really physical, loves the contact. He's quite abrasive, but the skills, like if you've seen him play lately, he's got box kick off right and left foot, and he can fend off both hands. So, a guy that age, what he's able to do, it's pretty good to watch.
One of the big talking points the last couple of weeks has obviously been Intermark and his injury and what that means for the French team come the World Cup. Their connection, do you think that there is a way of matching their connection, whether they have Hastoy or they have Jalibert or whoever it is at 10? Is there any way of matching that connection that you have between DuPont and Intermark?
No, I think French rugby have built a good a pool of players the last couple of years. They've got a lot of depth. You look at any position that they've got a lot of depth. But whoever fills in for Roman, I'm sure they'll try and keep similar cohesion connection that Roman had with Antoine. But I think for us, especially the All Blacks, I think the key for us is up front. Like, their forwards love to pick and go, love mauls. And I think for us, if we saw that match in 2021, that's where it all started for their momentum, was up front. And if we're able to do that, makes the job a little bit harder for Antoine and whoever's at 10.
Going back to DuPont, even if he doesn't get that platform, does he still perform?
Yeah. I've seen it a lot of times where even though he's going backwards, he's still able to create momentum, still able to go forward. As for us, because he loves pressure. He loves people targeting him, which allows him to set other people up or create space somewhere else. So, even though we do dominate up front, I think we still need to be on our toes to see what he's able to create.
But when you've looked at the All Blacks performances this year, say in comparison to what it looked like in 2021, do you see them progressing in the areas that they need to progress in to beat France in the first round of the World Cup?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's been awesome to see how they've been able to evolve the game and get the results that they wanted. But, looking back, I'm not saying it's going to be the same, but looking back in the past World Cup years, 2002 years before 2011, we lost. In 2009, we lost every home game in the Tri Nations, and everyone was saying that we're a no-show for the World Cup. And even in 2015, we didn't have the best year, Tri Nations as well. So, even though it was a tough last couple of years, it's just good to see the trajectory of the team in terms of how they're playing, the style of rugby, and key players are peaking at the right time.
Just following your socials, did you have a bit of time with the ABs?
Yeah, it was good to take the family over to London for the weekend, and perfect timing for the guys to arrive at Lansbury there. They had just arrived that morning, so the boys are just doing a flush post-flight training, which was awesome to take my son and watch the boys and be able to catch up with some familiar faces. But, Tamati Williams, I've seen him on TV, but seeing him in person, he's there you go.
How was the vibe in camp? Was there, sort of that edge of excitement now it's finally there?
Yeah, a lot of excitement. Good to see the young boys cheerful, bouncing around, which is what the old dogs like Sam Whitelock and Dane Coles need some excitement, enthusiasm around those grumpy head.
What are they asking from you when you're in camp? Is it a bit of a talk or just to go in there and rub shoulders and pass on some experience? Or what are they asking from you?
I think the initial reason why I went over there was just the relationship we have with the sponsors to be able to keep that commercial connection going and just the ex-All Blacks showing face. But also just to get along the guys at training, just to be able to share our knowledge in terms of what we experienced pre-World Cup and what they could expect. But it was just good to be able to just get along and then chat to some of the management, some of the young players in terms of what I know of French rugby and what they're going to expect when they head over.
What was the focus like? What's the expectation? Now they're there, they've got one more game. What are the key things they need to get right leading into this test, but then, going into that first test against France?
For this team, I just think they just need to get rid of the mental baggage that they had in the last couple of years, but also 2021, that November test. I remember in 2011, everyone was talking about France, All Blacks, World Cups. It's not really a good sign for New Zealand having France in their pool, but I remember majority of the team in 2011 hadn't experienced 2007 or 2003, so we didn't have that baggage, those bad memories. So us young guys, we just wanted to get out there and play. And I think the challenge was for the guys who had experienced 2007 was to mentally switch off those memories and just leave the team, which I thought Richie and Kiwi and the guys who were there, they led the team really well.
There's such a big similarity there in that, you played France in the pool play and then you had to face them at the end. If the All Blacks win this World Cup, there's a really good chance that they'll have to beat France twice as well. We had a viewer question come through on an email from Matt Farrar, and he basically says, what would be better for the All Blacks, to hold something back in this first game and have something extra for the final if you face them again? Or do you just go all in for this particular game against France?
I think you go all in because it doesn't get any easier. If you do qualify first or second, you're either going to face South Africa or Ireland. So I think you go all in, gain confidence throughout the all phases and then just throw everything in the kitchen sink when you get to the final phases. But I think that first game is going to set the tone for the rest of the World Cup.
from a strategy point of view, if you don't go all in, you're sort of not backing yourself to innovate throughout the tournament. I don't think you can keep the same game plan through the tournament. So the big thing for me is you go all in and then you watch them like a hawk, nail your stuff week to week, but sort of be proactive as that coaching management group to know where that game needs to get to so that they can implement it, you know, quickly to best, you know, take control of the situation further down the track.
And Ian Foster has been all in for the key games this year, hasn't he? It's been that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think guys like Joe Schmidt just play such a big role, man. Like, he has got such a creative mind when it comes to, you know, innovating and pushing beyond those limitations, so to speak, in short spaces of time. And, you know, Jerome sort of alluded to it, there's a lot of experience in there, so that over a number of years they've learnt how to absorb and change relatively fast. So the main thing will be is that them being able to articulate enough for the younger guys if they're needed.
Mm. Jerome, one of the key things going into this tournament was that Shannon Frizzell did such an amazing job at six, and people were saying, you know, this is the next coming of Jerome Kano and all sorts of things like that. Short of embarrassing you, he's out for a few weeks. Where do you see that position sitting for the All Blacks through the first 3 weeks or so of the Rugby World Cup?
It's a tricky one. We've got some good young guys that can slot in there, but you know, going back on Shannon, he's been incredible the last couple of years, and it's been good to be able to see him hit his stride, but little hurdle with his little injury, but looking forward to seeing when he can get back. But yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Scott Barrett try six and let the two old heads lock in the second row. But saying that, we've got the two young loose forwards from the Chiefs there who can start in and do the job as well, which is exciting.
I think that physicality is going to be massive. And if you look at the squad in terms of going into the World Cup, not so much this week because guys will have to drop back out. But if you look at Luke Jacobson, probably, you know, he is called concrete shoulders for a reason, and that physicality is going to be massive. I do think there's an option to play Tupou Vaa'i there, but I think he'd be better suited on the bench because obviously Brody's got to get through his injury, so, you know, Sam and Scott are going to have to do the business there. And I think you're risking too much because he hasn't had a lot of international minutes, that if he has to play the full 80 and then move into lock, you know, that's not quite a good suit. And out there, theory would be Dalton. I mean, Jerome, you can probably talk to this. His ability to cover six as a power athlete.
Yeah, I think Dalton can cover all three, 8, 7, 6, which gives the selectors a bit of flexibility in terms of where they want Sam and Artie. But Luke Jacobson, he definitely has concrete shoulders. I've run in one of my last games for the Blues, the Chiefs, I ran into one of his shoulders and the big mistake. But I'd like to see him as well. Really happy for him to make the squad after a few injuries the last couple of years. And I'd love to see him have a go there too.
I think one of the best things as well on Frizzell's development is he was forced into lock for the Highlanders, and he's become a real weapon at line-out time. Like, I've harped on for years that you really, as a hooker, you really want your six to be a line-out option. And it just opens things up for the locks, and if it doesn't open things up, then you know your six is going to get the ball. Now there's a big focus that, you know, guys like Luke, Dalton, if they are to slip into this role, you know, Shannon's taken some fantastic ball at the back of the lineout, which creates such a fast level of play, which has been beneficial to the All Blacks game plan. So I still think that, you know, potentially maybe you factor that in and a Tupou Vaa'i may be the option.
Mm. What I like about this weekend, Jerome, is that All Blacks Springboks is a test match. This isn't a warm-up game. This is a test match, because that's the only way that the All Blacks Springboks works, right?
It's one of the best test matches to play in when you're at All Black. It's the Springboks All Blacks test match. But, I'm sure they've got things that they want to try and want to keep back. But in terms of how they want to play in the World Cup, physicality, like Tupou said, that's a non-negotiable one. I'm sure the boys will head out there and dig in.
On the Springboks, man, that's a hell of a comeback game from Siya Kolisi for that amount of time out. He just didn't really look like he was out for as long as you'd expect.
Yeah, I was. We were talking about this the other day that normally knee injuries take about 5 to 6 months unless your name's Sia Khaleesi or Anthony Zalonch. But yeah, it's dead. You're going to recover real fast into World Cup year just to get back. But the way he played, it didn't even look like he had injury. It's incredible.
I think that's a massive cog for the Springboks. Like, they've had a little bit of an up and down start to this year, which, as we know, doesn't really matter much when it comes to World Cups because teams have, you know, done it for years and come out better for it. But he's almost like their mojo. Like, if he's in there and he's firing, you know, Springboks fans must be just ecstatic with the way he's come back.
Jerome, one of the most interesting talking points of the last couple of weeks has been what's been going on with the judiciary, with the cards. Obviously, we had the Farrell incident last week. He got the red card. It was taken back by the judiciary. Now World Rugby is going to go and have an appeal. And then straight off the back of that, we see Billy Vunipola get, you know, a very similar thing and a red card. It appears that the tackling technique in England isn't that great. And also, one of the interesting things about it was that Richie Moonga came out, Stephen Luatua came out, Warren Gatland came out. People are feeling very free and easy to exercise their opinion on such matters, especially when you saw the double standard maybe with George Mwala. Why do you think that players these days aren't afraid to voice an opinion on such a thing? Because in the past, I think people would have just run for the hills or tried to say as little as possible.
Yeah, I guess with that Owen Farrell, George Mwala incident, I think the frustration comes where there's so much inconsistency in terms of decisions with the judiciary. Like, first offence and you get 10 weeks, brought down to 5 weeks, and then repeat offender gets nothing. I think that's where the frustration is. I don't think it's Owen Farrell. Problem. I don't think people should be attacking Owen. I think it's judiciary and the system in terms of if they're going to crunch down on head knocks and high tackles, then should be all across the board, not just certain teams or certain hemispheres.
On the tackle techniques, I remember there were some adjustments that was made, not to the level it is at now, but around sort of giving yellow cards. And I remember, like, at the Blues, you were practising on dropping your tackle height pretty much every training.
Oh, I'm not one to talk. If you go back on my highlights, I'm sure every tackle that you see on the highlights will be a yellow or a red card. But, yeah, you're right. So it's once you have a habit that you stick to, it's really hard to change it. But I think the problem lies in people making the rules and people clamping down on the rules. Are they going to rule all across the board or just certain teams?
It definitely feels like a double standard. Walking that line between tough and fair, what do you teach your players about that?
Like, aggression's always going to be a rugby, it's a contact sport, and guys are going to want to dominate the opposition. But I think me here with the academy, I think technique comes first, and you can always make a good tackle going low or heading around the waist. It doesn't always have to be up and around the chest or the shoulder area. So, yeah, I think there's a fine line between being dominant, being aggressive, and bending the rules.
How do you walk that line as an international team in a Rugby World Cup arena? Like, do you have to become ultra-conservative?
No, but I think you have to, you know, in terms of the build-up and controlling that sort of fire in the belly but cool upstairs mindset. If I use Lachie Swinton as an example, and I'm not trying to make about individuals, but when he first came in, it was that Bledisloe low, and he just wanted to make his presence felt. You know, Dave Rennie obviously loves that physical collision, and he just got it so wrong off the first kickoff. You know, so it's about, like, sort of like Jerome says, like, everyone can have that aggression. Like, you do not become a professional rugby player at any level without wanting to, you know, assert yourself, especially if you're in the forwards, in that dominating situation. But nowadays, man, you become a liability to be picked, let alone be contracted on good money if you don't make that adjustment. So I think you can have both, but as I've stressed last week and as I sort of just said, Jerome there, it takes a big commitment to change that you know, tackle technique, and there needs to be some sort of expectation that's not going to happen overnight.
The professionals that we're talking about, they're not amateurs, so if you're going to get paid, you got to work to change it.
And I think environments change. Like, that used to be celebrated because it was allowed. Mm. So you were built up by it. But now, if a teammate just keeps getting red carded and yellow carded, you're actually going to be like, mate, this is terrible. Like, this isn't working for us. Like, so the environment won't actually allow it either. So there is, because it's all changed in terms of what's expected and what's loved, if you get it wrong in any of these teams, man, you'll find yourself left out in the cold pretty quickly. Mm.
So for England, they've got a couple of blokes now up against the signing commission. They're not playing very, very well. What happens here? You know, when you think about it, it feels like it's chaos within their camp, but, you know, really, they've got a couple of weeks to sort it out. We've seen, I think, probably best example, 2007, it was absolute chaos in their camp and they still made the final. Is England out of the running here, or is this the perfect time to learn this lesson?
Potentially it's the perfect time. I suppose the only thing I will say is, and Jerome, you and I have been through similar seasons with the Blues, it's like the harder you try, the worse it gets. Which sounds stupid, but you try so hard, it's just, you just almost, that snowball down the hill gets bigger and bigger. So similar to what I suppose Jerome said for the senior guys that have the baggage of 2019 for the All Blacks, you almost just got to let it go. And you know, make sure you prepare as best as possible. But if you go in second guessing yourself and your tackle technique, you'll get physically dominated and you'll lose the test anyway. So you might as well, go in with a clear head and give yourself the best opportunity. I think we know they've got the skill set, but if they keep losing key players to judiciary, they're probably not going to be a chance.
No, I think England's going to be a force. If you look at the class that they've left out of their squad, they've definitely got the depth to be able to fill in and have a World Cup squad. So, I know a lot of guys in that set up that team, and I'm sure come World Cup time they'll be where they want to be. But for me, I'm not too sure if it's right or not, but I don't really pay too much attention in terms of form of teams before the World Cup, because you see teams turn up to the World Cup and they're on. So, it gives you a little indicator of where teams are at and what kind of game they're playing, but it doesn't, it's not the full story in terms of what you're going to expect at the World Cup.
What are people saying in France? Because, you know, in New Zealand, we're talking about France a lot. Who are they talking about in France?
The All Blacks. they've got this L'Equipe. It's like a monthly or weekly magazine that's just dedicated to rugby. And the last edition was just all about the All Blacks. The rivalry the French have had with the All Blacks. And, Yeah, definitely the front of mind for the French of the All Blacks
in their first game.
A little bit of Ireland, but I think from what I hear, what I see, majority of the talk is about the All Blacks.
You have to think, because they're in the pool, it would be a big fixation. Yep. And just, you know, 2011, last time they're in a pool together, you know, like, there's just so many storylines and angles that you can go down. I think that, you know, both of us are excited about it, but also both as fans nervous, because it literally could go either way.
Yeah. What is the discussion about Ireland over there? Obviously, they managed to get a win this year. An incredible team that plays an incredible brand of rugby. When you look at it from the French point of view, are the Irish up there with the All Blacks as a team to beat?
I think the French's first focus is the All Blacks, but definitely... from where I sit, the Irish are definitely as dangerous as the French to the All Blacks. The team, the brand of rugby.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
They play when they're on. It's just incredible to watch. So, I think front of mind for the French is the All Blacks, but definitely I'm sure they'll be keeping an eye on what Ireland are doing, and I'm sure the All Blacks are doing the same.
What did you think Ireland did really well to beat France this year? And maybe is that something that the All Blacks can mimic?
The style of game, like off a try line drop kick, they did a set move off a try line drop, and they scored off it. It's just that style of game that they have. It's so expansive. The rush speed with Jamieson is so quick. So if you let them get the front foot, it's hard to stop. We've experienced it the last 4 years here with Toulouse playing Leinster, which is pretty much the Irish team. And the speed of ball, the contact area, it's second to none.
I think the importance of Sexton to be out there, though, like we talked about Joe Smith and how he's an innovator. They got on like a house on fire when, you know, they were coaching and playing. So their innovation, like Drone says, like he's almost thought of every what if possible. How do they get themselves out of certain situations? So he's a key cog, I think, to be on the field if Ireland are going to go all the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, burn on the weekend.
Yeah, I think he's key. Sexton's key because you watch the Champions Cup final, there was no Sexton, and under pressure, they let a 17-point lead go. And under pressure, you want your best players playing when their pressure comes on, and you saw the Leinster game plan unravel when the pressure came on from La Rochelle. So I'm sure the French will be keeping an eye on how that game panned out and what they can do to capitalise on.
Of course, there's the South Africans as well. Both Ireland and South Africa are the possible, I suppose, quarterfinalists to face France and New Zealand. Last time you played South Africa in Twickenham, 2015, must have been a superb memory. I've chatted with a bunch of people in the lead up to this World Cup about a bunch of All Blacks as we try to make different content for Sky Sport. And there are two memories that come up when they talk about you. It's one, the 2015 try against South Africa. The other one is the Digby Ioane tackle, which is at legendary status. Superman status. Maybe we start with that try because you had quite a lot of work to do. Can you talk to us through your memories of it and how it played out?
I remember probably about 3 weeks before the World Cup, we'd been practicing the popover pass or the bridge pass because we knew South Africans like to shoot. They like to shoot them from the wings, and it was crazy how it panned out because Richie had been in that same position at training and he kept throwing these pop balls, and we were like, that's going to be a hospital pass. Yeah. Then he popped it, I jumped, and Noel was in front of me, and I just had to put the foot down, and I was lucky enough to get it. But it was crazy how you set things up in training, and it works exactly how you trained it.
Yeah, totally, because it was a hospital pass too, because you had to reach it up here on the run.
I'm just lucky Lou Diego wasn't 10 meters in front of you, smoked me.
You threw that left-hand fend. Is that what you did in training too?
No, at training, I never get training tries, and let alone in the games, but I was just lucky that it all panned out that way for me.
What's the rule with training tries?
You know, you don't want to be known as a training try specialist because normally it means you never, ever contribute in games. Especially if you're a dirty. If you're not playing much and then you start carving up when it's two-hand touch or shoulders on, it's not full contact. it's people blow up like within a second and it's full contact.
Yeah.
It's just like you get hunted down.
Are there any in particular candidates that you can remember who are shockers at it?
Not really at Super or Black level.
But down at Harbour.
Maybe I was it. That's
you, me is you.
Yeah. I definitely know a couple at Harbour, that's for sure.
The only one that used to come up in training, but I couldn't say anything because he would carve up in the game, was Rico Ioane. He'd just make like silly a trade.
That's true.
I'd just let him go because he backs it up.
Yeah, yeah. And we've in fact got Rico Ioane on the show next week, so make sure you stay tuned for that interview with Rico next week. Now, let's talk about the 2011 semi-final. The tackle on Ioane. Like, Ioane had just beaten like four guys. He just shrugged them off.
He was scoring.
And he was scoring. His head was down. He was carrying three blokes. And it was like, this is try time. What happened at that point when you got your arms on him?
Man, I don't know. It just happened the way it did. I didn't plan for it to happen that way. But I was just lucky that Izzy and Kibi were able to slow him down a little bit for me to be able to anchor the foot and stop him. But geez, it's not anything that I'll train or even think about doing. It just panned out that way. It's crazy.
And do people bring it up all the time to you?
Yeah, they always ask me, well, what are you thinking? Do you train it? What do you do? What do you bench press? I'm like, mash. I'm not too strong. How it panned out. I couldn't tell you how it happened.
You and Kevy, though, were synonymous for it at Super Rugby level as well. Like, there's a number of times that Kevy's just going really low and then you just come and absolutely maul them. And Kevy just his body height, his ability to get low and keep his legs driving. Like, so many times it would be like Defender of the Week video clip and it would be Kevy and Loms just absolutely destroying some poor bugger.
Are there any moments from your career on top of that you remember as fondly of those or more, from whether they be personal or team-wise?
I'd have to say the 2015 quarterfinal, that springs to mind in terms of being with the guys that were part of 2007 on that same field, and during that week, that 2007 game kept being repeated on TV and stuff over there. So for us it was a bit of a let's settle the score on this field for these boys. So it was awesome for us to put that performance out as a team.
And I think if you constantly saw it, it's just a constant challenge to you. And you know, as Jerome says, everyone's got their own little motivators as to why they wanted to do it. But the more you see it, the more you're connected to that, and that connects you to the motivation for the day. And if you look at that game, it was just, it was 23 men possessed. Mm. It was a demolition.
The finals phases for us in 2015 was quite set. It was set up quite nicely for us because during the pool phases, we never really performed that well. Argentina, Tonga, Namibia, I don't think we really played the way we wanted to play. Never got the results that we wanted. So when we got to the quarterfinal, we still hadn't put out a really solid performance. So I think it was that week that DC and Richie really led the team in terms of how we wanted to play and the mindset. And you saw those two, they were the ones leading the charge. And and DC just followed us from one to the semi and the final. It was incredible.
I remember hearing a story about that Argentina game. I'd love to hear if it's true, that you guys got caught in traffic and and the traffic stuffed you up a bit.
Yeah. Oh, honestly, I was a shambles in my head. I was like, no, my pre-game routine's out the window. Not going to be able to warm up properly, but there was a bit of traffic around coming from the Lansbury to Wembley. It was there was everyone, all block roads everywhere. We were able to get there and get the game going.
Was it touch and go literally to make it to kick off, or what was it?
Usually you're only got 45 minutes before you have to actually get out and do your individual warm up, but I think it was just 10 minutes and then get your kit on and out.
Professional sports people are funny. Like, they do like their routine. They do like to have time and not feel rushed. So the moment that's out of whack and your strapping is done on the bus rather than, it's not, just everything plays with you mentally, going, you know, you're trying to tick everything off in a shorter space of time, so you can sometimes do everything a little bit half-assed, and then it just can flow onto that mental side of the game. I say it all the time. I reckon professional sport, 90% of it's mental, 10% of it's, you know, sort of the physical aspects of the game, and something like that is, I'm sure heaps of people out there, oh, it shouldn't be a problem, rah, rah, rah. But at that level, when the stakes are that high, man, yeah, it's real crucial that you dot your I's and cross your T's, because you will be left behind if you don't.
Mm. Is that the interesting part of a World Cup? Because, you know, it's 7 or 8 weeks, and so you have all of these little experiences along the way where it's quite a long journey.
It is long, but when you're in there, it just flies by. I think the longest part is actually getting to the World Cup, but once you get there and you get underway, it just flies by. Yeah, some really good memories, 2015 and 2011. Yeah.
Do you have a few bets hanging around around the offices?
Not many bets, but I've already started to play some pranks. A couple of the boys have walked in and I've hung up some All Black scarves on their lockers.
I bet they love that.
I don't think they'd be getting too physical with you, Jerome. I think they'll take it on the chin and move on.
Awesome, Jerome. Hey, well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cheers, Lobs.
Jerome Kano, obviously you played a lot of games with him. Quite a remarkable player.
Oh, yeah, massive. He's so, like, humble and modest, but he's got a razor-sharp focus when he gets in sort of pressure situations and big games. And, you know, he sort of passes it off to Richie and Dan, but, you know, he was a real key cog for both 2011 and 2015.
He watches everything out. He loves rugby.
Yeah, he's astute. He's got an awesome ability of articulating complicated parts of the game in layman's terms. So that's why I think, you know, he's... you know, going to be a perfect person coming through the coaching ranks, and hopefully one day we see him back here.
Yeah, well, hopefully he's not teaching too many French people how to clear rucks in the way that he did before the All Blacks take him on in the first round.
To be fair, it would be they'll have to do a few reps before they get to that quality.
Now, the next person on our show is another one of your former teammates, Offa Tuamafasi. Offa, we spent some time with him a few weeks ago, along with many of the other All Blacks that we've had in this series leading into the World Cup. Offa, of course, talked about playing both sides of the scrum. He talked about what it's going to be like in France with the noise and overcoming all of those things. And he also gave some great insight into players coaching each other. Here's Offa Tuamafasi. Offa, thanks for coming on board for the Rugby Pod.
Thank you. I'm a big fan. I try to keep up whenever I can, but yeah, good to finally hear. Thank you for the opportunity.
Excellent. Jim would be stoked about that. Does he force you to watch? Or
no, it's actually good. Like, for me, listening to your guys' chat comes from, like, obviously rugby players. Mm. You know, it's stuff that I see as, you know, close to what you guys are saying and commentating. You know, you listen to other shows or media, and it's like far away from what, you know, a rugby player's opinion would be on whatever they're talking about.
Can we get that on a handle? Can we get that, please? Yeah, I'll see it on rugby,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, yeah, we'll definitely.
Chipper, yourself as well.
Yeah.
I love the show.
You've been blooding in a roomie this week. Tamaiti Williams. What's that been like?
Who was in the room first? I think I was. And Tamaiti walked in. He's a big man. I tell you, he doesn't look 140 or what.
Yeah.
His body weight as well. He's 140 kilograms, and I'm 123. I think I look 140 more than he does. He's just a big man, real lean, good man as well. Mm. Still young, obviously grew up in Australia, made the decision to come back home. Mm. Yeah, made some tough choices in his career so far, but it's working for him at the moment. Put him in a good space.
And I guess just for you, obviously, mate, you've been around, you call yourself a veteran. Is that okay, us calling you that now, a veteran?
No way.
But didn't, you know, very weird, we played a lot with school together, and I guess, mate, your growth and where you are now, I heard a lot of chat around Jason Ryan coming in, Joe Smith obviously coming in the last 12 months. What have they done specifically that we've seen the growth in Mendoza and against the South Africans? You guys were just brutal and relentless in your attack strikes and your breakdown especially.
Yeah, Jace has been a big part coming in, obviously in our forward pack, coming in, lifting our standards, the details. He loved details, you know, getting that right, making sure the boys are, you know, getting our stuff done and do it well. I think, obviously, we're closer to the World Cup. Boys are putting their hands up, playing good footy.
Being able to play both sides and the development of your loose head play. How hard have you worked and what have you been putting into it to get to a level where you're becoming kind of ambidextrous? Is that what you call a proper play both sides?
It's a good skill to have. Obviously, we have Tamaiti now, who's playing both sides. We've got Tevita Mafileo also, who can play both sides. It's not just me anymore, which was the case the last few years. It's a great skill to have, but it comes with its challenges. I have to move across to the other side, play there for a couple of weeks, and when I go back to Tyhead, it's like I've gone back two steps further backwards than where I was when I left. When we went into Blues back then, there was only one prop on the bench, and that guy has to cover both. I think that's why I had to play both sides.
You've done all right, mate. You've done all right. You're still there. You've been there for the All Blacks now for almost 8-9 years. I think you've done a good job.
You're about to pack down in a scrum. Like, what are the principal differences between what you do on one side and the other?
Tyhead, you get to push. It's simple as you get to push two people. You're trying to keep the scrum down, whereas Lucid, you're scrummaging with one side of your body, one shoulder, and you're trying to keep the scrum up. Tired's hard physically, pressure-wise, but loose head's harder technically because there's a lot of things you got to get right. I said the scrum goes down, 80-90% of the time would be the loose head's fault. Because his job is to keep the scrum up, you know?
If you're only hitting the scrum with one side of your body, the rest of your body has got to balance out. Like, you must have to do a lot of work as a loose head to make sure that you're not crumbling.
And obviously, tired, these heads is one of the main position in rugby, but I think loose head is just as hard. Until you go through it and scrum as a loose head, you don't get to realise how tough it is, especially technically. I think I've been around for long now that I know what it looks like.
Yeah.
But the next stage is knowing what it feels like, because obviously out there on the field, you can't see yourself doing skirmishing. But if you can feel when you're not in your strongest position, I think that's the hardest step to get to. So getting feedback from your teammate is very important.
All right. Lastly, I guess more so just this is thinking of the World Cup in a few weeks' time, months' time. The Irish and the French, a great challenge. The Irish came here, you know, last year and did a job on you boys, and you've shown growth from that area, and then going into France, you would have played in France before. What do you think you guys are going to need to do to win the Rugby World Cup, knowing that, you know, those two teams have probably been talked about as favourites with you guys in South Africa as well?
What do we need to do? Like I said before, I think we're heading the right direction. The boys are playing some good footy. I think we have the people in place to work closely together to have a plan for us in terms of we don't burn out early. The workloads for the players. Obviously, we've come out of a hard Super Rugby season, and I think the Chiefs and the Crusaders boys haven't had any rest. You know, I think that's going to be important. The challenge will always be there in terms of other teams are getting better, like you said, France, the Irish, you can't, South Africa, England, Scotland's doing well. You know, like Japan, on their day, they can beat anybody. That's, you know, you can't sleep on any team. I think it's going to be good going in there. I was part of the 2019 World Cup. You can just feel the weight of, you know, the expectation of going out there to win. We are the favourites for that World Cup, but I think it's quite good going in there. You know, it's got a lot of people in our.
Obviously, you've got your own expectations, which are probably the same, right? But the external conversation is a different one. That's interesting. The World Cup, France, you've done a bit of time there. What are your favourite aspects about going to France? Anything in particular you like to do while you're over there?
I just love the crowd. To be honest, it's hard going away for footy because know, you're just so focused. You get one day off a week where you're trying to get your body right, you know, get some homework done. So you end up, you know, resting, but you didn't get out and explore and get to see the country. But yeah, for me, I love the fans. It's just a different level from here, from New Zealand. Stadium's packed, it's loud. People sing, it's almost like a football crowd, you know, you see on TV. Like, you know, that first game against France, imagine that stadium, that crowd will be.
We have been in some hostile environment. I can imagine Ellis Park is really hostile. But you're talking to a lot of the guys, the French are different, it's always loud. How do you guys prepare for that and knowing, you know, if they get off to a really good start, you're not going to be able to hear yourself? So you guys obviously have plans in place to be able to try and nullify that noise?
If you're on the sideline, it's kind of hard to block out the noise. But if you're in there playing, that's for me. When I'm on the field playing, like, you can't, you're just zone in that you can't really...
Can't hear anything.
No, you don't.
Yeah. Maybe if they score a try, then you actually hear it.
Obviously, when the whistle goes, and then you know, like, not so tunnel vision, you kind of look up, you get to see everything, then you hear.
Yeah.
But running out there, your eyes is on the ball, you can't see. So
that's a good point,
Yeah. Eyes on the prize. Awesome. Well, hopefully the prize is a big one. You guys come back with the World Cup. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Good, bro. Thanks, off.
Well, for Tuonga Fasi, there's some good insight. Especially enjoy the insight into, you know, playing both sides of the scrum and how difficult and how much of a challenge that is to be able to do it and the balance your body has to take to get it done.
Oh, massive. I mean, your core plays such an important role in that and locking you up and giving that stability as well as your bind. And Offa's really coming into his own at Loosehead. I think that statement he made with Newell and Takiaho in Dunedin really reminded me of us looking at having our own form of a bomb squad like South Africa.
We'll probably see a bomb squad to some degree this weekend.
I'd say both teams are operating a bomb squad.
New Zealand versus South Africa at Twickenham. It's a huge test match. It's a great way to set up yourself to take on the French.
You know, there is something riding on it, but they can chance their arm a little bit and try a few new things, I'd say. And like Jerome sort of touched on, is you've got to go all in. There's no holding back, and back yourself, and the coaching group needs to back itself that it can innovate and evolve. But I think it's a big confidence piece, like the All Blacks, and you've heard it, you know, Sam Kane sort of come out and said, you know, this has been a more enjoyable year, able to be on the field more, but also, you know, every leader is performing and playing well. So there's a great buzz and hum. So, you know, win, lose or draw, they want to still have that buzz and hum and belief that, you know, they can go to the World Cup. And if you use South Africa as champions in 2019, you know, they sort of got dominated by the All Blacks in pool play and still went on to win. So it's not as drastic. Like, people don't need to be so, I suppose, stressed if the result doesn't fall our way.
It is really hard not to get caught in the week-by-week result stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it is with All Blacks, and that's the beauty of it. That's our superpower, is we expect to win every week, and that pressure and expectation is a great thing for the jersey, don't get me wrong. But this will not dictate whether we win the World Cup or not. Either way, if we thrash South Africa, it's not a big statement that it's ours to lose, if that makes sense.
Cool. Well, let's have a look at the games to come this weekend. New Zealand versus South Africa, what are you seeing happening here?
Yeah, I think the All Blacks will win. I do think there's a good... positive balance. One day I'll pick against them, I promise. might need to be an All Black trial. But I just think they're in a good spot. I think South Africa are dangerous, though, from what I saw against Wales. Wales are concerning, one or the other, but I do think that Sir Kolisi piece is huge, so it will be a little bit closer. And they're going to have to end it. Like, Springboks will not let them dominate physically like they did for 20 minutes in Mount Smart. She will be a doozy in that first 20.
Yeah. There's a couple of other interesting games this weekend. I think particularly for me, the England-Fiji game. We saw the way that they played on the weekend. That's the Fijians against France. Now we look at this game against England. England aren't playing well. If Fiji can prove themselves again, they head into that first week of the Rugby World Cup where they play Wales, who look awful. They could well get a huge upset at the start of the World Cup if they get through this the way they should.
Yeah, right, Fiji are a chance. I still think Benny Volovolo is a missing piece. Like, I just don't understand that selection. So obviously annoyed someone. But he just seemed to have a better balance in terms of that control out of their exit territory. So I'm not as confident as I was after watching them play Japan. But there are a chance that, I don't know, like, is it Marcus Smith going like a return? You know, there is I just don't know. Like, I don't know where England are at. It's very confusing. And because every time they've played, it's been a red card. So they've never given themselves an opportunity to win. I think if they can keep 15 on the field, obviously a home game, then they should probably come out of that
one. Let's run through the next few quite quickly. Scotland, Georgia.
Come on, mate, quickly. Come on, Jiver, stop
talking.
You can
do it quickly. You can do it.
Scotland.
Scotland, Italy, Japan.
Italy.
Spain, Argentina seems pretty obvious. Yeah. Ireland, Samoa.
Ireland.
The last one, France versus Australia.
France.
That's a really interesting game, though.
It is. It is. For Australia, more so than the French. The French have sort of, you know, had their up and down play, and I feel like their squad's in a good place, no matter this result. But I just don't see. Again, Australia's like England, like, because they've changed their squad so much, it's quite hard to know where they're at, you know? Yeah. Like, it's a total different squad from the Tri Nations and Rugby Championship, sorry. So I don't see them hitting the ground running. I think France will be too good for them.
Just Eddie Jones was funny again this week. giving the journos a serve.
Oh, I need a shower from all your negativity. I thought he was having a breakdown live on television. It was outrageous.
It was bizarre, all with the hat on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it was hard to take him seriously at the same time standing in an airport with a huge hat on.
Those hats. You've got to be able to pull it off, and there's a few in that squad that just didn't quite have the hat look about them.
Yeah, so really, this is a good chance for Australia to show that they're the real deal, though. They've done fairly well against France in recent years under Dave Rennie.
They have, but man, they've got some combinations to get going. Mm. Like, there's not a lot of time together. There's a lot of new people that you need to give a run, because you can't decide to do that in a World Cup. So I think the squad will be, you know, full of opportunity, and I don't think Eddie will be that sure on who he's picking leading into that first round.
In Paris against what's likely to be possibly the top French team.
Yeah, and it's starting to build. Like, in France, like, the hype and the excitement for the French people starting to build. They're going to go there. And I mean, it's great for Australia, though. They get to test the water before it actually matters. So they'll be able to lean on this if they make it to the later stages of the competition.
We'll see what happens. Thanks again, Jibber, for this week.
Thank you.
See you again
next week.
I'll
be cooking next week.
No, that's not the truth.
No,
that's not the truth.
I won't be. I'm trying to convince myself.
Awesome as usual. And we'll see Bryn back next week as well on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. So we'll catch you again then. Thank you to Ofa Tungafasi. Thank you to Jerome Cano. And thank you for watching, listening, however you take in the podcast, whether it's an audio pod, whether it's on YouTube, on Sky Sport, or whether you catch us on rugbypass.com. Thank you very much for tuning in. Make sure you send us through some questions on the email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz, or send them through in the YouTube comments section. There's always a few there. It went absolutely nuts over the Owen Farrell incident, so thank you very much for engaging with us. Thanks once again for joining us on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Mā te wā.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.